I'm Sally Helm with the podcast History This Week. In each episode, we serve as your eyes and ears into history's biggest events, major elections, world wars, scientific breakthroughs. But we also bring you into the smaller, behind-the-scenes stories, the unsung heroes, secret meetings, even personal grudges that changed the course of history. Listen to and follow History This Week, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with the History Channel. Available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
A story you don't see every day here, and it's interesting. It was at NOLA.com by John Simerman about, I don't know if you remember, Jeffrey Walls, 48 years old. He left NOPD in 2021, 28-year vet. He went to be the police chief. He was the French Quarter police commander. He went to be the police chief of Ketchikan, Alaska. But he had some kind of dust-up or something at a restaurant back in 2022. A guy was in a restaurant, bumped into his wife one time and apologized and bumped into her again. And the guy didn't react very well. The police officer didn't, Jeffrey Walls. Anyway, there was a physical altercation. He was indicted by a grand jury. The judge dismissed the felony charges. But anyway, he made an agreement to never be in law enforcement again in exchange for charges being dropped. So if you're thinking he's going to come back here, I don't think that's going to happen because I think that would violate the agreement. Anyway, I just found that to be an interesting story because you don't hear very often about a guy that was in the head of the French Quarter police district going to be the police chief of Ketchikan, Alaska, then getting in a fight in a restaurant and then never being in law enforcement again. So I thought I'd pass it along. Anyway, Steve Geller joins us now, WWL sports director. It is the most wonderful time of the year. Saints football back. How you doing, Steve Geller?
Like you said, Tommy, doing fantastic. We're back with football. Obviously, college has kicked off. And then this week, Thursday, Friday, Sunday, Monday football. Gotta love it.
And then a little bit of Friday night football, too. High school football back. And I understand
yes,
there's a Geller on the roster at the Rummel Raider team, right?
Yes, sir. He'll be starting tonight at left guard for the Raiders' eighth grade team, freshman year, and does some work still with the varsity squad. So we'll be checking out that game. Obviously, he'll be on the sidelines Friday night. They're at the Shrine on Airline.
Outstanding. How's mom dealing with that?
Nervous as always, yeah. Of course.
Yeah, because that guard, there can be some collisions involved there. You know what I'm saying? Especially pulling.
Today, and he's like, "Dad, he was feeling the anxious nervousness of it." I'm like, "You never get over it." We actually heard from Tyrann Mathieu on Monday. He's going into year 11 and still feels that kind of same way going into a season opener where, you know, it's that unexpected. You're looking forward to it. You don't know what's going to happen week one, but just anxious to get back into the grind. So I tried to tell him, like, that never leaves you. Even, you know, going on the air for me, it's not as, you know, extreme, but you still get that pumped up feeling, that anxiousness of getting ready to go on air all the time. And I think that's the same for a lot of folks in their workplace.
Yeah, I don't mean to make the big mama sports nervous or anything like that. But, you know, as a guard, when you pull, you tend to have maybe some more violent T-bone collisions. But, Mom, everything's going to be fine. Don't worry about it. He's a fine, strapping young man. Let's talk about the Saints, Steve. Let's talk about semifinal 53. Or is this any more roster moves but to happen before Sunday? Can they happen, or is this who we're going into Sunday with?
I think this is what you see is what you get right now. They made a few moves, obviously, but none at the offensive line position, which I think was a little bit of a surprise for folks, just considering the deficiencies we look at when you think about the Saints offensive line in this year. There's a lot of questions there right now. You have right now starting left tackle, rookie in Taliese Fuaga, left guard veteran Lucas Patrick, and behind him, Nick Saldivari, who's at least back at practice now, was dealing with injuries for most of training camp. Still questions, though, around that position. Center Eric McCoy, you're pretty set there. And also at right guard with Cesar Ruiz. And then another big question mark then comes at right tackle with Trevor Penning being your starter. And behind him is a guy in Ali Udo, who, if things go terribly wrong with Trevor and you need to make that switch, you know at least you have someone behind him that has been there, done that. I think 30-some-odd games he started in the NFL before that you can fall back on. But we've at least seen some progression from Trevor Penning. I'm not saying that it's been a world of improvement, but definitely looks better in the run blocking scheme, still needs work, and pass blocking situations. And man, oh man, we're going to see, you know, those live bullets coming flying on Sunday noon in the Superdome when a NFC South rival in Carolina comes to town. They're going to be a vastly improved team than a two-win squad they were a year ago.
So is Penning going to be lined up against Shai Tuttle? I'm trying to see what kind of defense Carolina runs.
The Panthers on that front.
They got three man front, right?
Yeah, and I would definitely be worried about a guy like
Derek Brown
on that right side. he's pretty good.
Tell me about Derek Brown.
Guy that's been in the NFL now, I think 2020 first-round pick for Carolina. Definitely one of the more elite players on that defensive side of the ball. You've seen him put up, you know, consistent numbers over the years for this squad. You'd be being able to get that push up front and, you know, creating pressure that hasn't necessarily turned into the greatest number of sacks, but, you know, eight total in his career so far in his 4 years in the NFL. But like I said, being able to push that pocket and making guys uncomfortable, and someone that's going to definitely, I'm sure, be licking his chops seeing a guy like Trevor Penning across from him.
Yeah, I said that backward. I just wanted to get in there. Shai Tuttle was with the Panthers now, but every defense has that guy, right? Their guy, and it seems like Derek Brown is the Panthers' guy, and I'm just wondering, the Saints are going to what? Try to give Trevor Penning some help on that side with a tight end or something, or a back? What do they do?
Well, you would imagine so, and hopefully the tight ends can block better than LSU's tight ends helped out last game, because that was not Purdy at all. But I think that this team, their week one matchup with Carolina, isn't going to be such a huge test up front. Obviously, Carolina is stout, but not one of the better teams when it comes to applying pressure. Their sack numbers were just as abysmal as New Orleans was a year ago. You just got to, you know, worry that this defense can, I guess, come out the gates a lot faster than they have in the past for the Saints. I think a lot of it, a lot of the problems last year, when you look at the numbers, scoring offense, scoring defense, it's crazy. Finished top 10 a year ago, but they still, you know, were just a 9-win team, which doesn't compute, especially being plus 11 in the turnover giveaway ratio. Sack numbers have to improve for the Saints, and just coming out faster in games, both sides of the ball. It seemed like after halftime, whoever did the hollering in the locker room got a message across to everybody, and they came out a lot more intense, a lot stronger in that second half. But somehow they need to bottle that and unleash it in that first half of action, because there were just way too many times last year when we saw the Saints playing from behind, playing catch-up in games. And that obviously is not a good place to be, especially this week one matchup against Carolina. Like I said when we first started here, a 2-win team a year ago, they should be vastly improved this season. New head coach, year two for their rookie quarterback in Bryce Young. They beefed up their offensive line, spending a ton of money there. But you can't come out with those slow starts, especially at home, against an NFC South rival. We hear all the time these games count as two. And with all the intense scrutiny going on with this team right now between head coach and quarterback, you could see it get ugly early on if the Saints come out and falter.
Yeah, but let's go the other way on that. Let's say they come out and they look really good against Carolina. How quickly can they turn that narrative around?
Well, and then everyone will be like, okay, what can we do on the road? Week two is a matchup with the Dallas Cowboys, who have had, you know, their issues of their own dealing with some contract negotiations. That's going to be a tight matchup. Obviously, the Cowboys considered one of the teams in the NFC East that I think you're considering could be the top squad, along with the Philadelphia Eagles, to represent them as the top of the division this year. Dak Prescott still looking for a deal. CeeDee Lamb finally got paid. And I know the big man on defense, Micah Parsons, is going to be, you know, waiting for his deal as well. But the Dallas Cowboys aren't as much as a scare, for me at least, as a cohesive unit. It's definitely a team filled with a ton of talent. You're going to have to go in their house and win. But I don't think it is definitely something that this team can't do. And I know, obviously, everyone's looking forward to the Dallas game, because I think They're like the New York Yankees of football. Everybody, if you're not a Dallas fan, you definitely hate the Dallas Cowboys. And I mentioned, like, right after that, you have another NFC East opponent that's going to be vying for that top spot there in Philadelphia. So the start of this season is very difficult, and it kind of lightens up for the Saints at the midway point through the rest of the season. But early on, a lot of tough matchups. After Philly, you got Atlanta. Then it's Kansas City, Monday Night Football in KC. So that's why I keep talking about those fast starts for this team. It'd be great for them to get off on the right foot, obviously week one against Carolina, but to be able to build that momentum, definitely key against some of the better opponents. And, Atlanta's after the Eagles, back-to-back bird matchups. And we know everybody's, like, the Falcons seem to be the darling pick of the NFC South this year just because they've added Kirk Cousins to the mix. Well, I think he's a obvious upgrade at quarterback for them. I don't think he's going to, be that be-all, end-all for them where he moves the needle that much and improves them to being an NFC South leading team. I got my concerns over the Tampa Bay Buccaneers trying to take the top spot from them after they've won back-to-back-to-back NFC South titles.
A little bit confusing with Atlanta because they sign Cousins and they draft Penix, which...
right.
Anyway, but let me get back to the left tackle situation.
And then we didn't see either one in the preseason, which is really weird, too.
Yeah. Let me go back to the left tackle thing, because Dennis Allen was talking about either Trevor Penning or Ali Udoh, one of them claiming the job to be theirs, and it seems like neither one did, and Trevor just kind of starts as the default?
Yeah, I would say that's pretty accurate, because it was basically his job going into camp. He didn't do anything, I guess you would say, to lose it. But, yeah, as you mentioned, there are a few positions, even that safety spot alongside Tyrann Mathieu, that Dennis Allen kept waiting for somebody, like he was saying, to step up and claim the gig. There were positive steps, like I mentioned, with Penning, but there was no clear-cut, oh, my goodness, this is the guy. He looks like he's turned the corner with this fresh start from left tackle to right tackle this year. So definitely him and, just a lot of other questions along the offensive line. I don't think Talia Fuaga is going to be a liability, but you do have questions next to him and that veteran in Lucas Patrick, who's been a journeyman, and he's been there, done that before. But as your starting guy, I have a question. I'm more comfortable with him being a rotational bench piece.
And you know what I think is getting lost with the right tackle discussion is that you got a rookie starting his first game in Taliese Fuaga, right?
Right. Tali, too, was, he's moving over to the left side after being predominant.
Wait, what I meant by right, is that how you pronounce his name?
Yeah, Taliese Fuaga. A lot of guys in the locker room call him just Tally, so it makes it easy on me, too. So just they say Tally.
Yeah, but he's moving right. In addition to starting his first NFL game, he's moving from right tackle to left tackle. So there's a question
mark. Yeah, so there's
too.
A lot of – definitely. And we've talked to some NFL analysts about it. Some haven't been too keen on the Saints making that move, thinking they should have kept Fuaga at that right tackle spot. But the good thing is I feel like this preseason – We weren't really talking about Fuaga at all, and for offensive linemen, sadly that's a good thing when you're not mentioning their name. Obviously, the rookie is going to have some developmental issues along the way. You're going to see from him, but overall, definitely a solid pickup by this team, and hopefully can be a anchor on that offensive line. It's a shame that what happened with Ryan Ramczyk. Obviously, he has been an All-Pro player for you along that offensive line. But that knee issue just was so detrimental to him. He's shelled for the season. We're not going to see him at all. And even the Cajun Cannon had joked in the past, it's like, is there any way we could see if we can get someone out of retirement from the black and gold like from a year ago to just see if they can contribute along this line? Because, as you know, it's a key to running the ball, key to passing the ball, and I don't care how big of a strength this defense is for the squad. If the offense has problems, moving the football, we can't expect to win games, 9-3 each week.
Mm-hmm. Let me take a break. We'll pick it up when we come back, talking to Steve Geller, WWL Sports Director. So out of curiosity, what number is that guard for Rummel wearing at Geller?
Number 72.
Okay. Was that yours?
No, I played linebacker in high school.
Oh, so you're in the 50s? Yeah. Yeah, in the numbers 50s, not in the 1950s. That would be me. 922. More when we come back. Any questions, comments, talking about the Saints with WWL Sports Director Steve Geller, 504-260-1870. They kick it off against the Carolina Panthers Sunday, man. Good to have football back. And as I mentioned earlier, Saints have the longest active week one win streak in the NFL. They've won five openers in a row. Next is the Dolphins, or the Dolphins, Eagles, and Buccaneers at three, followed by the Browns, Ravens, and Commanders with two season openers. We'll take a break. Come back. WWL. 920.
I'm Sally Helm with the podcast History This Week. In each episode, we serve as your eyes and ears into history's biggest events. Major elections, world wars, scientific breakthroughs. But we also bring you into the smaller, behind-the-scenes stories. The unsung heroes, secret meetings, even personal grudges that changed the course of history. Listen to and follow History This Week, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with the History Channel. Available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Nine more with Steve Geller now, WWL Sports Director. Saints kicking it off against the Panthers on Sunday noon. All the action here actually starts, our coverage does, at 8 o'clock. Steve, when it comes to Saints offense, what you've seen in training camp, preseason, a limited amount we saw from Derek Carr, running game, etc., Panthers defense, break all of that down for me, if you will. And Taysom Hill, as a matter of fact, a captain this year, right?
Yeah, it's a nice switch for him being included in the group. You consider him one of the leaders on that offensive side of the ball. And, you know, the initial depth chart was released by the team recently, and you have Taysom back at the tight end position. Initially in training camp, he was with the QB group. But I think that's more accurate when you see him listed among the tight ends. As you know, we're going to see him wide receiver, running back, tight end, pretty much Mr. Do-It-All. And there's still going to be those the QB power moves, I'm sure, in Kubiak's scheme. We've even seen fullback added to the Taysom Hill repertoire. And I think that a pretty exciting year for him, just to know that Clint Kubiak has a new toy to use as well. I think he's going to be used a lot like the 49er used their fullback in Kyle Juszczyk. Because Taysom has that same athletic ability, you know he's a tough runner, able to get that big yards after catch. Looking at the rest of this offense, too, I guess I'll start with that tight end group. You see Foster Moreau was listed ahead of actually Juwan Johnson on the depth chart. I would not make it too much of that, though, initially. I think Juwan is still your main offensive weapon in that. He's your big pass catcher, basically another wide receiver on the field. Foster is your more experienced, well-rounded tight end that can be a better blocker. And we've been, you know, hearing so much about in Kubiak's system that a lot of people, especially the wide receivers, are going to be relied on more to contribute in this blocking scheme. And, you know, with guys not as big, and you're number one in Chris Olave, wide receiver, and someone like a Rashid Shaheed, it'll be interesting to see how that pans out. I know a lot of folks talk about it's really, you know, not the how big a person is, but how much effort that you really want to put into the blocking. Talking with guys, you know, like Olave in the locker room during training camp, they mentioned that, you know, it's definitely it's here, and it's not going anywhere. So they have to embrace the new role, even though he's more used to being the pass catcher for this team. But the blocking is so crucial, obviously, for this run game. And, you know, 29-year-old Alvin Kamara still hasn't got a new contract from this squad. You know, I'm sure you've talked about the reports of his house up for sale. He does have other properties around the area, so it's not like he's bolting and leaving town already, because he mentioned, obviously, if his house sells today, he's got other places to live in the city.
Well, Steve, I cleared the air on this earlier. I actually live next to him in Bell Chase, and I got chickens. And it's not the chickens, it's the rooster. And on Monday night games, he likes to sleep late. The rooster's wake him up. So I didn't want to make that public, but I just thought I'd go public with that. But go ahead. What were you going to say, seriously?
Yeah, and I thought it was funny, 8K talking about, I can save a little money by trying to get rid of this place, and he's staying with Matt Barrows, the car dealership guy right now, which is kind of interesting. But behind him on the depth chart, a little scary in the running back room, because you got Jamal Williams. We'll see what he can do in year two with the Saints. Wasn't much of a showing at all last season after having 17 touchdowns the year before in Detroit. He just had that one at the end of the year on that cheapy victory formation tight end touchdown call against the Falcons. And then a guy, Jordan Mims, has stepped up into the starting, depth chart role, number three on the depth chart, just because we haven't seen someone like Kendra Miller since day one of training camp. Unfortunately, he just hasn't been available, dealing with a hamstring issue. Now on IR, he'll miss the first four games of the season, at least there. And then going back to those, the wide receiver position behind Olave and a guy in Rashid Shaheed. Number three, you're looking at a veteran in Cedric Wilson Jr., who's been in this kind of system before with the Miami Dolphins. I think he's a great addition, and that'll end up panning out well as wide receiver number three for the Saints. Dennis Allen praised this guy's blocking during training camp and some of the post-game press conferences or post-training camp practice interviews. So that's definitely a key for him maintaining his role there. But then a lot of questions after that in an A.T. Perry, Bub Means, and a surprising guy that made the roster, and a Mason Tipton. I'm still anxious to see him because I wasn't part of the crew out in California. They got to see him at the practices where he was reportedly, obviously standing out in these sessions. We didn't get to see him at all in preseason play. The Yale grad, though, has done enough to make the roster. A lot of folks, obviously speculating that the Saints didn't want to leave him off the chance in the waivers for other teams to grab him because they thought they were that impressed with what he was able to do during the training camp sessions that he was available. But he's someone, I don't know if he'll be active in game one of the regular season come Sunday against Carolina. Didn't get to mention either in the tight end group. A lot of folks excited about the incredible Holker, the undrafted rookie in Dallin Holker. He suffered some injuries too in the training camp, but was available towards the end. And just looking forward to his growth. More of a pass catcher, too. Not going to provide much in the blocking realm there either.
Marshawn Lattimore is good to go for Sunday, as far as we know.
Yeah, definitely good to go. He's been back in action at practice. We'll get more, of an injury update when the initial injury report comes out later today. The only person on the defensive side right now we're a little concerned about, Willie Gay Jr., the linebacker that they added in free agency from the Kansas City Chiefs. He was not present for the session. Dennis Allen would not elaborate on Monday anymore on why he was missing due to an injury. He just said that the first injury update will come out today, and we'll be waiting that for midday to see what's up there. Other than that, guys like Chase Young, who missed some time, but that was, DA said, was for personal reasons. He's back in the fold. Cam Jordan, hopefully he can rebound big time this year. The Saints, I know a lot of folks were disappointed in last season. Nobody was more disappointed in last year than Cam. He talked about basically, gutting through the year, having playing on one foot, dealing with injuries. And a guy I'm interested in, a big year for, Pete Werner. The team, decided to pay him, keep him around alongside DeMario Davis. They believe in him, and just he's dealt with a slew of injuries too, unfortunately. And it just availability, along with the fact pass coverage last season just looked awful. You mentioned with the cornerback group, Marshawn definitely the leader there. Your shutdown guy, hopefully all's happy with him. I know he's going to be looking to get paid as well, being one of those. The money has just become ridiculous in the NFL, being tossed around. Patrick Surtain from the Denver Broncos just got a big payday this morning. But alongside him, man, Paulson Adebo, his contract's coming up soon for the Saints. I'm expecting a huge year from him as that number two role on this corner group. Who knows, after this season, he could be your number one guy. And then in that slot role, Alante Taylor in year two, I love what I'm seeing from him. Big-time playmaker for this squad, I think, that he's vocal on the field, that trash-talking guy. Not in the same realm of CD Deuce, but he's able to get under people's skin. And I think just a great potential future leader on this defense because he is one of the more vocal guys that's not afraid to say anything.
All right, before we run out of time, you want to run through the schedule one at a time? You give me your predictions?
Oof, man, it's
well, I'm going to go through them one at a time. Here we go. You can say what you want. I'll tell you what I wrote down. You can tell me what you got. Carolina.
Okay. Win.
Dallas, at Dallas.
I got to win.
Philadelphia, home.
Jalen Hurts has been a bugaboo. I don't see them getting past the Eagles. That's a loss there.
At the Falcons on September 29th.
At Atlanta, I got them losing.
All right. At Kansas City on Monday night.
Another loss. So three straight losses for the Saints.
I think that's an upset. I think they're going to upset the Chiefs on Monday night. I just get that feeling. That would be big, man.
That would help turn a lot of folks around, too.
It would. I just get that feeling. And then you host Tampa Bay October 13th.
Got to win.
You know what's happening on October 17th, Thursday night football. The rotund, I hate to say that, Sean Payton returns to the Dome. He's put on some weight, man, I'm telling you. But go ahead. What do you think?
I got them stomping on Sean's return to the Superdome. No way the black and gold let him come away with the victory.
That Dome is going to be electric. My mom's birthday, October 27th at the Chargers.
Got them winning at the Chargers. I'm not as high as a lot of folks, even though Harbaugh's become the coach over there. I just don't see it with wide receivers or running backs.
That's a big unknown. At Carolina.
Got that as a W-2. They sweep the season series with Carolina.
Hosting Atlanta on a 10th.
Another W, starting to piece those together.
Hosting Deshaun Watson and the Browns on the 17th.
Worried about that Browns defense. I think they end up having a slip-up right before the bye week, so a loss there.
Yeah, who's that stud on the defense for Myles Garrett, that's what I'm thinking of. Yeah. All right, so you get the bye week.
Yeah, right.
Week 12, you get the bye. Week 13, December 1st, getting ready for Christmas, you're hosting the Rams.
Yeah, the Rams are one of those pesky opponents. Mm-hmm. Sean McVay seems to be a thorn in the side of this team. I got a loss.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. Then you go to New York to play the Giants on the 8th.
Win there. The Giants are a sorry-ass team. They should beat them.
Jaden Daniels and the Commanders coming to town on Sunday, December 15th. That's going to be a big game.
Definitely should be exciting. Hopefully Jaden is not too comfortable being his rookie year, but I do have them beating the Washington Commanders.
December 23rd, the frozen tundra of Lambeau Field.
Literally the frozen tundra, right?
Yeah.
I got a loss in Green Bay there. It's just going to be a too tough of a turnaround for them, and the weather, not looking forward to that one.
And then December 29th, the Raiders, again, doesn't seem to match up well.
No, I think that the Vegas goes down in New Orleans. I got a win there for the Saints.
Oh, wait, that's right. That game's here. I messed that up. Okay, and then you close it up. Close it out at Tampa on January. Well, it's to be determined. You don't know when that game's going to be yet.
Yeah, definitely a coin flip matchup there. Always tough. NFC South opponents, you always hear it. This one in Tampa, though, I do have them dropping.
Saints go to playoffs?
Ooh, on the season prediction, I got them with 9 wins, Tommy. I don't know if that's enough for the division or to make the playoffs. I sure as heck hope so. Playoff football is a lot more fun to talk about.
I got them at 8-9 because I'm always wrong on my predictions, and I thought if I put them at 8-9, they'll probably sweep the entire schedule. Thank you, Steve. Have a great season. Good talking to you. 9:41 traffic quickly now on WWL. 9:47, 13 till 10. Tommy Tucker, WWL. A lot of attention brought to the Elysian Fields overpass, if you want to call it a bridge. I guess technically an overpass is a bridge, about the concrete cracking. But I, having worked in construction for a while, I know a little bit about concrete. Norma Jean Matei, who knows more about it, or has forgotten more about it than I'll ever know, joins us now. Talk about it. Norma Jean, our friend, professor of engineering at UNO, past president of the American Society of Civil Engineers. Let's face it, Norma Jean, we made you a star, right?
Hey, good morning,
Tommy. How you doing, all right?
Yeah, I'm doing fine. I'm doing fine. Just got home just a few minutes ago from the Hill Country in Texas for Labor Day weekend.
Well, good for you. I know when it comes to concrete is very strong in very strong when it comes to compression, very weak in expansion. I got that right or backward?
In tension. So it's very, very good in compression. So squishing it, but when you try to pull it apart, it says go right ahead. It's not so good.
Right.
So that's why we put reinforcing steel in it.
And that goes to what can appear to be faulty when it comes to concrete, not necessarily. So I almost got into a fist fight, literally, with a concrete contractor at the old house because of a driveway that was poured. And a couple of days after, I saw some plastic cracking. I thought I freaked out. And just talk about concrete, plastic cracks, and that's a little bit more than that that's happening with this Elysian Fields overpass, but just generally about how what you see with concrete sometimes might be a true indicator of what the situation is, Norma Jean.
Right. So as was mentioned, steel is put into concrete in order to carry the tensile or tension forces. And so you're relying on two different materials acting together to give you the type of strength that you need. And concrete cracks. So you mentioned that you saw driveway cracking. Well, concrete will crack. There's temperature and shrinkage cracks, things that you're really typically not that concerned about, but when you start seeing bigger and bigger cracks, then you start getting worried. You start monitoring the situation, because any big crack that allows the atmosphere, that allows water to get to your reinforcing steel, is of concern, because then the steel will rust, and you'll start losing that capacity to carry tension.
But wait, so let me ask you a question real quick. Doesn't concrete dry throughout its life, and as a result, isn't that steel exposed to moisture?
Well, concrete will shrink, so it dries, so it shrinks, so you'll have some smaller cracks, but what you don't want is large cracks to get all the way into your steel. So there's requirements via codes and standards that require that you have a certain amount of concrete cover, and that concrete cover protects your steel reinforcement.
The moisture within the concrete of itself, if it's always drying, isn't there always moisture in there that the steel's exposed to or not?
So there is, especially in concrete that is along waterfront, so any type of dock or any kind of infrastructure, bridges or one that typically you've got a lot of your substructure and your abutments in the water. So the problem that you really are concerned about is in that splash zone. So that area that is constantly getting wet and then dry. So if it's under the water, you're much more protected, even if it's got you've got water contacting your steel, than something that is wet and then dry. So those types of circles cause more problems than something that's pretty much dry or something that's really submerged.
So you're past president of the American Society of Civil Engineers. If you were to go out to the Elysian Fields overpass, which you have not, but how do you determine what's serious when it comes to concrete and what's not, as far as the tensile strength of the steel and if the bridge is strong enough or if it's a serious threat or not? How do you even go about determining all of that?
So when you inspect, what you look at is, are there large cracks that have gotten to your reinforcement? And if so, then you monitor the reinforcement. And you've got a certain, these are reinforcing bars. If you worked in construction, you know they're rough.
Rebar.
So the rebar is rough, but it's pretty much circular in cross-sectional. And so you're going to monitor that you haven't lost a lot of your steel cross-section by monitoring the diameter of those reinforcing rods. So you can ascertain what your reduced capacity is. So that bridge is being, bridges across the state are inspected twice a year unless they fall into a certain poor category. And so those that are worrisome have annual inspections. And bridges are also rated. So if you are starting to see a bridge that's in poor condition, then you may want to post it, meaning you're going to put signage up that says 6-ton limit, 2-ton limit, depending on what your limit is. And that way, you know, passenger cars, personal trucks, not a concern, but it's the large trucks with large, heavy loads that really are the drivers, what we design bridges to handle. So you might post and say, hey, this bridge has a 2-ton limit. Big boy truck, you got to go around.
So when it comes to somebody texted in, you need moisture and air to rust. So while the steel rebar in the concrete is exposed to moisture, it's not necessarily exposed to air, right?
To air, right. Gotcha. It's because rust is oxidation.
Thank you. Real quick, the wire that these iron workers who are out of their minds tie this rebar together with, can that be used as any kind of indication of exposure to moisture? Would that fail before the rebar or not really?
Well, it's a different steel, so it's not as high quality.
Right.
So
I just wonder.
It will.
Not an indicator. Thank you, Norma Jean. Have a good day.
You're welcome.
Welcome back. We'll talk to you again soon. Taking a break, finding out what Noel's got for us when we come back on WWL. 9:47, 13 till 10. Tommy Tucker, WWL. A lot of attention brought to the Elysian Fields overpass, if you want to call it a bridge. I guess technically an overpass is a bridge, about the concrete cracking. But I, having worked in construction for a while, I know a little bit about concrete. Norma Jean Matei, who knows more about it, or has forgotten more about it than I'll ever know, joins us now. Talk about it. Norma Jean, our friend, professor of engineering at UNO, past president of the American Society of Civil Engineers. Let's face it, Norma Jean, we made you a star, right?
Good morning,
Tommy. How you doing, all right?
Yeah, I'm doing fine. Just got home just a few minutes ago from the Hill Country in Texas for Labor Day weekend.
Well, good for you. I know when it comes to concrete, concrete is very strong in very strong when it comes to compression, very weak in expansion. I got that right or backward?
In tension. So it's very, very good in compression. So squishing it, but when you try to pull it apart, it says go right ahead. It's not so good.
Right.
So that's why we put reinforcing steel in it.
And that goes to what can appear to be faulty when it comes to concrete, not necessarily. So I almost got into a fist fight, literally, with a concrete contractor at the old house because of a driveway that was poured. And a couple of days after, I saw some plastic cracking. I thought I freaked out, and just talk about concrete, plastic cracks, and that's a little bit more than that's happening with this Elysian Fields overpass, but just generally about how what you see with concrete sometimes might be a true indicator of what the situation is, Norma Jean.
Right. So as was mentioned, steel is put into concrete in order to carry the tensile or tension forces. And so you're relying on two different materials acting together to give you the type of strength that you need. And concrete cracks. So you mentioned that you saw driveway cracking. Well, concrete will crack. There's temperature and shrinkage cracks, things that you're really typically not that concerned about. But when you start seeing bigger and bigger cracks, then you start getting worried. You start monitoring the situation because any big crack that allows the atmosphere that allows water to get to your reinforcing steel is of concern, because then the steel will rust, and you'll start losing that capacity to carry tension.
But wait, so let me ask you a question real quick. Doesn't concrete dry throughout its life, and as a result, isn't that steel exposed to moisture?
Well, concrete will shrink, so it dries, so it shrinks, so you'll have some smaller cracks. But what you don't want is large cracks to get all the way into your steel. So there's requirements via codes and standards that require that you have a certain amount of concrete cover. And that concrete cover protects your steel reinforcement.
But I'm wondering about the moisture within the concrete itself. If it's always drying, isn't there always moisture in there that the steel's exposed to or not?
So there is, especially in concrete that is along waterfront, so any type of dock or any kind of infrastructure, bridges or one that typically you've got a lot of your substructure and your abutments in the water. So the problem that you really are concerned about is in that splash zone, so that area that is constantly getting wet and then dry. So if it's under the water, you're much more protected, even if it's got you've got water contacting your steel. than something that is wet and then dry, wet and then dry. So, those types of circles cause more problems than something that's pretty much dry or something that's really submerged.
So you're past president of the American Society of Civil Engineers. If you were to go out to the Elysian Fields overpass, which you have not, but how do you determine what's serious when it comes to concrete and what's not, as far as the tensile strength of the steel and if the bridge is strong enough or if it's a serious threat or not? How do you even go about determining all of that?
So when you inspect, what you look at is, are there large cracks that have gotten to your reinforcement? And if so, then you monitor the reinforcement. And you've got a certain, these are reinforcing bars. If you worked in construction, you know, they're rough.
Rebar.
So the rebar is rough, but it's pretty much circular in cross-sectional. And so you're going to monitor that you haven't lost a lot of your steel cross-section by monitoring the diameter of those reinforcing rods. So you can ascertain what your reduced capacity is. So that bridge is being, bridges across the state are inspected twice a year unless they fall into a certain poor category. And so those that are worrisome have annual inspections. And bridges are also rated. So if you are starting to see a bridge that's in poor condition, then you may want to post it, meaning you're going to put signage up that says 6-ton limit, 2-ton limit, depending on what your limit is. And that way, you know, passenger cars, personal trucks, not a concern, but it's the large trucks with large, heavy loads that really are the drivers, what we design bridges to handle. So you might post and say, hey, this bridge has a 2-ton limit. Big boy truck, you got to go around.
So when it comes to, somebody texted in, you need moisture and air to rust. So while the steel rebar in the concrete is exposed to moisture, it's not necessarily exposed to air, right?
To air, right. Gotcha. It's because rust is oxidation.
Thank you. Real quick, the wire that these iron workers who are out of their minds tie this rebar together with, can that be used as any kind of indication of exposure to moisture? Would that fail before the rebar or not really?
Well, it's a different steel, so it's not as high quality.
Right.
So
I just wonder.
It will.
Not an indicator. Thank you, Norma Jean. Have a
good
day.
You're welcome.
Welcome back. We'll talk to you again soon. Taking a break, finding out what Noel's got for us when we come back on WWL.
I'm Sally Helm with the podcast History This Week. In each episode, we serve as your eyes and ears into history's biggest events. Major elections, world wars, scientific breakthroughs. But we also bring you into the smaller, behind-the-scenes stories, the unsung heroes, secret meetings, even personal grudges that changed the course of history. Listen to and follow History This Week, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with the History Channel. Available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.